From my youngest days, I always had the feeling that we were all involved in some great crusade, that the world was a battleground for good and evil, and that our lives would be consumed in that conflict. It would be my good fortune if I could play an important or heroic role. And from the very beginning, this conviction was rooted in my family's fervent Catholicism and deeply intertwined with the politics of the country. There had been Irish politicians on both sides of my family for generations, so it was no surprise that we children talked politics from the day we could speak. Such passion came naturally to a people for whom the distinction between political and religious martyrdom had blurred during 800 years of British occupation. From their arrival in America, the Irish took to politics as the starving take to food, having been stifled for centuries by rules that forbade them from participating in the political destiny of their nation. As early as 1691, Irish law had prohibited Catholics from voting, serving on juries, attending university, practicing law, working for government, or marrying a Protestant. In Dungannstown, near the port of Wexford, my Kennedy ancestors learned to read and write in an illegal hedge school. The priest who taught them was found out and hanged for the offense. My progenitors were still in Ireland during that Black February of 1847, when the announcement in England's House of Commons that 15,000 Irish were starving to death every day so moved Queen Victoria that she donated £5 to the Society of Irish Relief. Britain produced, stored, and exported thousands of tons of grain and livestock from Ireland during the five-year famine, more than enough to feed the population. But the Crown refused to divert these money crops, so Ireland lost a quarter of her people. Skeletal corpses littered the countryside, their mouths green from eating grass like cattle. A million sons and daughters of Erra, including my great-great-grandparents, boarded the coffin ships sailing west, and the Atlantic became, in James Joyce's words, a bowl of bitter tears. Even in America, the Irish encountered the familiar barriers of prejudice. Anti-Catholic sentiment would eventually drive my father's parents, Joe and Rose Kennedy, from their beloved Boston. Grandma would sometimes show us clippings from old Boston newspapers, where the acronym NINA, No Irish Need Apply, followed all the best employment listings. Still, wherever they landed, the Irish flourished. Fecund Irish mothers with little opportunity for fulfillment beyond childbearing produced an invading force that triumphed at law, politics, sports, literature, and business. No people were ever prouder than the prosperous Irish Americans who returned to the old world a generation later with heads high. During his triumphant tour of the British Isles in 1887, boxing champion John L. Sullivan, the apogee of New World cockiness, cordially greeted the Prince of Wales. "If you ever come to Boston, be sure to look me up. I'll see that you're treated right." My grandfather must have felt every bit as jubilant when he recrossed the Atlantic to attend the court of St. James as FDR's newly appointed ambassador to England. Grandpa was the dominant figure during my childhood summers on Cape Cod. His home, the Big House, which he purchased in 1920, was in Hyannisport on the shores of Nantucket Sound, along with our house, John Kennedy's, and Jean Kennedy Smith's in a tight compound surrounding it, and the Shrivers's and Ted Kennedy's houses in a slightly more scattered orbit around the tiny seaside village. Grandpa bought the home when the Brahmins of brown-shoed Cohasset rejected his application to their golf club on account of his religion. Although Hyannisport was also bigoted and Protestant, his fellow Irishman, Larry Newman, who owned the golf course, welcomed him.